Papa loves Mambo. Mama loves Mambo. Look at him sway with it, getting so gay with it, shouting ole with it, wow. Papa loves Mambo.
Papa loves Mambo.
All right, that's enough dancing around the studio. Look, we've got very important things. Don't you know what's going on in the world? There's very serious things going on in the world. You can't be dancing around the studio to Papa loves Mango? Mango, no, Mambo. Of course you can. That's the thing to do when there's serious things going on in the world, is dance around the studio. So hello and welcome to another catch-up episode. How are you? Now, if you're new to... if this is the first catch-up episode you've listened to, I generally ask that question, you know, how are you? And then you can, you know, respond. You're in your studio. There's no one else around. Just one word. How are you? Oh, great. I'm going to ask you again. You ready? How are you? Ooh, you picked that word. Interesting. Well, I hope you're well. I'm great, thank you. Happy birthday in advance, I hear you say. Well, thanks very much. Or maybe it'll be, maybe this will come out on my birthday, which is the 21st of September, which makes me a Virgo. And my mother was a Virgo, so I grew up thinking Virgos. She didn't like being a Virgo, and I grew up, because she was, I think she was the 28th of August. So I'm just closer, you know, I think I'm a day or two off Libra. So I grew up hearing my mother like bad-mouthing Virgos and then thinking, yeah, well, I'm probably a Libra. But yeah, as I've grown up, I've learned to appreciate being a Virgo very much. I'm not really big into astrology, not because I don't believe in it or do believe in it or anything like that. I just can't keep it in my head. I had my chart done a few times, but I can't remember any of that stuff. Which house is in the ascendant and which trine this and, you know, and I had really good readings, you know, where people would map out the next, you know, year or something. And I remember one time I put it all in a calendar and I tried to, you know, and it didn't correlate at all. So yeah, it just doesn't stick in my head, but you know, it's kind of cute and interesting. And but I'm certainly not the sort of person who, you know, it's not the first question. Probably I never actually ask somebody what their star sign is. What's your star sign, though? Is it important to you? Well, good, I hope. Now, what have I been up to, I hear you ask? I've been up to a lot. I've been busy, I'll tell you. I'm not going to go into what's going on lockdown-wise because I seem to talk about that every episode, but, you know, stuff's going on. But that's not really related to what I'm doing. I've been painting quite a bit for me because I've been going through a process to do with painting. I kind of ran into, I wouldn't say it was a block, but I sort of ground to a halt. It's probably a better way of putting it. I had quite a few paintings that I'd been working on, in some cases for years, because I'm quite a slow painter, mainly because I do other things, like make a podcast, that are time-consuming. And that I thought, you know, I've kind of grappled, is that the word? Probably grappled with being, I don't know what the word is, a polymath, a multipod, there's lots of different words for it. Basically, somebody who is involved in different things. And, you know, I've had periods in my life where I've kind of went, no, that's it, I'm just going to focus on the one thing, because that's the, you know, the kind of common wisdom, isn't it? You know, just pick one thing and stick at that, you know. I've tried to do that a few times and, never really worked out. I always ended up drifting into, you know, doing different things all at the same time. So as I've said in previous podcasts, the old spirituality, consciousness, reality, all that stuff is the constant. It's the overarching thing. But then all the other things are integral to that as well. So painting just won't leave me alone. I kind of, you know, thought, oh, well, that's it. I'll just focus on other things and, you know, but the painting, you know, I'll just have to sacrifice something, you know. But yeah, it won't leave me alone. So anyway, having that conversation with Nicholas Uribe, that had a profound effect on me. And in a way, it kind of helped unground the halt, if you know what I mean. I say I had ground to a halt. Well, having that chat with Nicholas kind of helped it come unground. Stop being halted. And I've continued to watch his Your Painted Lives YouTube channel, which I mean, I can only tell you about my experience, but I find it very, very helpful for me. And I know initially I was like, I don't have time to watch YouTube, you know, videos every day, because he puts one out pretty much every day, like 5 days a week. But what I discovered from watching them, I made time. I figured out how to make time to watch them when I was doing something else, like having lunch. is that it's not your standard kind of demonstration video. In fact, I don't think he does any of that kind of like, here's how to paint an eyeball kind of stuff. Sort of has a theme for every week, and he just talks about the theme as it relates to the painting. So you can watch him painting, which is very helpful, I find. I mean, I find it helpful watching anybody painting. It's just some part of my subconscious just picks it up. But what he talks about, it's kind of art philosophy in a way, or his philosophy. But he raises very interesting questions. If you enjoy the granular aspects of, you know, the conversations I have with artists, like what colors do you use, what palette do you use, what lighting setup, all that kind of stuff, he just, you know, like, in a way, I kind of think I'm a little bit of an art nerd in that regard, in that I'm interested in that kind of stuff. But God, he just goes into it like it's a whole other level, and manages to keep it really interesting, you know. And there's something just about his passion for painting, and his, and how it, like, I have a spiritual kind of leaning and consciousness kind of leaning, everything looks like that to me, everything, this kind of spiritual aspects to everything. But I find his approach to painting to be profoundly spiritual, and I'm sure he wouldn't put it in those terms himself, maybe he would, but because he's talking about painting, but it's also, he's talking about himself and what he's learning about himself, what he's discovering about himself. And that all sounds very insular, but he manages to do it in a way that is very expansive, meaning I can find myself in everything that he's, most things that he's talking about, that I can kind of see how it resonates with me, in that, you know, he'll be talking about how when he's painting, for example, this is just off the top of my head, something that I remember and stood out for me, how he's sort of saying, oh, if you see the light hitting a leaf in a particular way and it makes you want to make a painting of that, then the whole point of the painting is to try and capture or reproduce that feeling that you had. So it doesn't matter about perspective, materials, all that is secondary to that initial impulse, which, I mean, maybe that's obvious to you, but it wasn't to me. I was kind of like, yeah, I never thought of it like that, but yeah, that's amazing. And that's just one little thing that just happened to pop out in one of the videos, you know. So yeah, I highly encourage, or not highly, I highly recommend Nicholas's channel. But then also the financial side of it, his approach had a profound effect on me as well, because I've kind of, you know, because I talked to a lot of artists and varying degrees of success with galleries, success meaning happiness with galleries, and then say on the other end of the spectrum is Ashley Longshore, who's giving the finger to the whole art establishment and just doing, going her own way. And that's pretty inspiring as well. And then this feeling of like, thinking about collectors and the sort of prices that, you know, even though figurative art is very good value in relation to the wider kind of art world, the bigger art world, or I don't know how you describe it, but the sort of, like, most artists I talk to, at the top end, their work is selling for 60, 70, you know, 100 grand. And that's gallery price. Like the bigger art world, that'd be cheap. You know, it's all in the 100s, 200s, 300s, millions of dollars. All of which, you know, like I personally couldn't afford to spend 70,000 euros on a or dollars on a painting, or 20,000 on a painting, you know. So there was a kind of a disconnect for me there as well. Because in, you know, back in the day, before social media, the only really way people could see your work was in a gallery, or, you know, maybe to make it, you might make it into a magazine or something like that. But, you know, like all the paintings, the big paintings that we love, weren't really seen by huge amounts, the huge numbers of people that they're seeing now. So in terms of feeling like you're reaching out and connecting with people, well, that's easy to do now. That's really easy to do. Like you can, if you've 5,000 followers on Instagram, you're probably reaching more people than Leonardo da Vinci ever reached when he was alive, you know, or Van Gogh when he was alive. Well, I mean, nobody saw his paintings when he was alive, but, you know, artists we think of, who are, you know, giants, they didn't have the reach that you have in your mobile phone. So from that end of it, that's, you know, in terms of reaching people and communicating, if that is the sort of thing that is of interest to you as an artist, that's already, you've already got access to that. So then it's kind of down to paying the bills. And you know, something I've been kind of thinking about for a long time is this idea of enough. Like how much is enough? How much is enough? And then how much is surplus? Like I've been thinking about the idea of, I'm very taken with the idea of not-for-profits and how I think they are the future, because an economic model that's based on growth on a finite planet, you know, that doesn't add up. Like eventually you're going to run out of planet. We've already run out of planet. So we can't keep using an economic model that's based on growth. It has to keep growing. And the current model does. That's why I had Donnie McLaughlin on all that time ago, and why I keep referencing back to him from the Post Growth Institute. And the idea of, because what his work is involved in is helping the economy transition into an economy that doesn't need to grow. And part of that is the not-for-profit model, like businesses that are not-for-profit. And I think it's a lovely model, you know. So a part of that is the idea of just personally kind of going, well, how much is enough? And I think I was saying it on the... I was saying it in a Zoom group. This thing of, you know, there's lots of studies been done that I think it's $75,000 a year. Beyond that, you don't get any happier. You know, if you make $80,000, you're not going to be happier. If you make twice that, you're not going to be twice as happy. It peaks. Your happiness level in terms of monetary compensation peaks. And most artists know this. Like you probably know this yourself. Like most artists, like you hear it in the podcast when I say to them, when I ask them the question, what's your big art dream? Apart from some, you know, very imaginative ideas, most artists are like, look, if I can keep just doing what I'm doing, I'll be happy. That's all I want. I just want to keep the show on the road. I just want to keep being able to do what I'm doing. And I think, you know, artists kind of get at that thing of enough. Like there's a certain amount beyond which you don't need anymore. It's not going to make you any happier. So like trying to sell paintings for thousands and thousands of dollars, it just always felt a bit alien to me or weird. So I didn't really engage in it. And I've just been sort of painting away, thinking about it. And then Nicholas's idea of just everything's $250. He just sells out everything he does for $250. Something about that just really spoke to me. And I'm certainly nowhere near I mean, just in time, I was going to say I'm nowhere near being able to just churn out a painting every day and for it to sell for $250. I mean, some of the paintings that Nicholas manages to do in a day are like exquisite, I think. So, yeah, he's, you know, he's very talented and he has the capacity to do that. But the idea is appealing to me. So that all helped it up and helped free me up a bit. And then one of the other things he talked about was, and talks about a lot, is about finding out the sort of painter that you are rather than the painter you think you should be. And I've been kind of slowly coming to that myself, again, from talking to all the different artists. This idea of separating out the artists that I love and the painting that I love and the style of painting that I love, and instead of kind of going, well, that's the way I should paint, letting myself paint, you know. So one of the things I realized is that I like the idea of small little things and the idea of making, which isn't talked about much in painting, but for me, I mean, maybe it's because I, you know, had a carpentry background or something. There's something about making things that really appeals to me. Tinkering, you know, tinkering and making. Like, I like when dioramas is something that they don't have in Ireland. We never had them, but the idea of dioramas just really appealed to me. And little models and little things. That's not to say I kind of make little models, but when I kind of meditated on, well, what is it that I actually like? I kind of came at these just little 12-inch square panels, wooden panels. Something about that just really kind of appealed to me. And so I started to get some and I could kind of see them being gessoed quite heavily. And then I just started painting. So I've been painting away these little panels and I haven't painted anything I like yet. But I like the process, and there are bits of each painting that I like. So I can kind of see it's kind of going somewhere, and it kind of fits in. It's fitting in with my schedule of doing all these other things that I do well. So, yeah, it's moving along. It's progressing along. And the paintings that I was kind of working on, they feel a little bit re-energized. I haven't started to work on them. But they feel re-energized, like I'll be able to go back to them or include them in the kind of workflow of it all. Papa loves mambo. Now, speaking of paintings, Jessica Libor got in touch to let me know about a show she's curating called The New Pre-Raphaelites. And I had a look at it. It's a virtual show. It's an online show. Lovely work. So I encourage you to go and have a look at that. It's at, I'll put a link in the show notes, but it's at eracontemporary.com. That's eracontemporary.com. You can have a look at it. And it's a lovely show. And well done, Jessica. Papa loves mambo. I've been super busy with Further Emergence, all that kind of work. So if you don't know what that is. Further Emergence is what pretty much everyone is, you know, if you've been listening to these catch-up episodes, you will have heard me sort of refer to what's happening, or what, as I see it, we're all going through a very big growth spurt. And Further Emergence is for people who are just really feeling it, who are very conscious of it. I was talking to somebody the other day and they were asking me, well, what does it mean? And it manifests in different ways. Like physically, it can manifest as all sorts of weird symptoms that feel like they've put your life on a pause, that you can't get any kind of medical real answers for. They're not, you know, they're not life-threatening, but they're just really debilitating. That's how it can manifest physically. Emotionally, it can manifest. It kind of has the quality of waking up one day and going, what is going on? What life is this? I remember treating this woman years ago, who was a farmer's wife, and she was lying on the table and I was working away, and she sat bolt upright and said, you know what, John, it's a terrible thing to wake up one morning and discover that you have five children. which I thought was a hilarious way of putting it, because that's kind of how it felt for her. Like, she woke up one morning and suddenly looked around and went, where did all these kids come from? And how did I get into, how is my life like this? And that's a real indicator of if you're in the process of further emergence. It's just kind of a, you know, almost, you know, night and day. One day your life is fine and the next day it's like a shoe that doesn't fit you anymore. It's just flopping around and it's like doesn't make sense and it's just disorienting. And I do sort of three different things to do with that. I do the meditations every day. I meditate throughout the day, but I do a live one on the internet. And now at this stage it's on Instagram, Facebook and YouTube, so whatever. And I probably will end up doing it on LinkedIn as well, as you know, when I get that organized. But it's not a class. I do explain what I do for people who are not used to meditating, but it's a chance to meditate together, and that's, you know, open to everybody. But it is on my Further Emergence Instagram. It's not on the normal art one, because I didn't want to mix the two and subject people who were just interested in art to videos of me meditating, which is kind of performance art in a way. Feels like it sometimes. So I do that. And then I also do Zoom groups every Friday. And that's for people who are in the process of further emergence, who want to kind of ask questions or share or get feedback. Because I've been through further emergence many times myself, like those inner growth spurts. Where, you know, like you go through growth spurts as you're a kid, and your body stops going through growth spurts, but you keep going through growth spurts on the inside. And it's those that can be quite disorienting. And it's easy to kind of feel like there's something wrong with you and end up in front of, you know, like someone who is relating to it as a you know, that there's a problem rather than it's a natural process that's going on. So I've been through that myself many times, and I've helped lots of people through it as well. So the Zoom group is a chance to, talk and share and ask questions about that kind of thing. And it covers a lot of topics. Now, I included the audio from a couple of the Zoom groups in the last catch-up episode. I'm not going to do that this time, even though I did get a lot of emails from people saying, oh, brilliant, I love them, they were fantastic, thanks so much. I can't do it again this time because it's just technically too tricky. It's too hard because it's easy enough when it's just me. But once people start asking questions, it requires sound editing. And as you know, I'm very streamlined at the moment. I'm more keen to get the episodes out to you rather than do these beautifully sound edited things. But what I will do is, number one, they're all on the YouTube channel. So if you search Further Emergence on YouTube, you'll find the YouTube channel easy enough. It's, or if you go to the website, furtheremergence.com, you know, there's links to Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, all that sort of stuff. I'll put the YouTube videos in the show notes if you want to go and listen to them. And you can just put them on and listen to them like as if they were a podcast if you want. I can tell you, though, I'll give you a quick roundup of what we kind of have been talking about in the last, you know, it's probably about three or four since the last, no, it's about three since the last catch-up episode. We've been through deconstructing existence and beyond. We've been through managing inner voices, you know, the voices inside your head and how difficult they can be sometimes. We've been through QAnon and the conspiracy theories and what all that means, and we've talked about certainty and how what certainty looks like in 2020. We've talked about wealth and the gap between the rich and the poor and what you can do about that and how to work with billionaires. We talked about Jeff Bezos and how we can help Jeff to help the world. We talked about corporations and how in a way they are kind of like, the way everyone's afraid of AI, artificial intelligence, that how corporations are actually the AI we're afraid of. And we talk about humor and how the humor is basically life has a sense of humor, and that it's a very soothing thing to kind of notice it and enjoy it and participate in it. I went into meditation quite in a lot of detail, actually, in the last one, which will be out soon. So, yeah, I'll include them in the show notes. They're all there for you if you want to listen to them. They're freely available to everybody. Now, if you're thinking to yourself, God, I'm really enjoying this podcast. I've listened to a few now and they're brilliant. And there's so many of them. And I've learned so much from listening to them. And you know what? If I met that John Dalton fella in real life, I'd love to buy him a cup of tea and have a chat with him. I'd love to do that every month if I could. Well, now you can. The tea part, at least, because this podcast runs on cups of tea bought for me by people like you who listen to the podcast and send me the price of a cup of tea once a month through the Patreon account. That's patreon.com/John Dalton, gently does it, all one word. And if you're one of those people who already send me cups of tea through Patreon, thanks a million. The tea is lovely and I really appreciate it. Now, the great thing is that if you can't afford to send me the price of a cup of tea or you don't want to, that's fine. You still get exactly the same podcast for free. It's sort of an honor system where the people who can afford it and want to pay for the people who can't or don't want to. So it's all lovely. So if you'd like to send me a cup of tea once a month, you can do that through Patreon. I'd really appreciate it. It makes a huge difference to me. And the other thing that's been keeping me busy is I have finally got around to starting to record my books as audiobooks. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, I think I mentioned before that I had had a go at it. But Audible is the division of Amazon that looks after audiobooks. And their level of sound quality is crazy high. You'd pretty much need to be a sound engineer, I discovered the hard way, to pass their submission. They have all sorts of requirements for very technical sound, certainly beyond me. So I'd had a go, I'd recorded a whole book, sent it in, and it was just refused. And of course, it's Amazon, so there's no people involved or minimal people involved. It's all automatic, automated stuff on websites. So I, again, with the algorithms, it popped up with this connection to an Irish chap who lives in Spain, who is a sound engineer and was offering his services, sound engineering services for podcasters. And of course, the algorithm put two and two together and popped it up on my feed. So yeah, I've connected with David, or Dahi is his Irish name. Or is David in Irish, Dahi. And yeah, he's we've worked it out. We've worked out how to do it so that I can record at my end and then I send it off to him and he polishes it up whatever way he does it, whatever, you know, wonderful technical magic he performs on it. And Amazon loves it. So I'm just getting all my ducks in a row now, because now that the technical bit is sorted out, I can concentrate on the bit that I'm, you know, good at, which is the artistic side of things and how I want it all to sound. So yeah, I should have the first, I'm going to do May Annoys first, and that should be out soon. I'll certainly let you know when it's ready. Papa loves Mambo. So I think I mentioned before that I was making friends with Spotify, and I like algorithms in the randomness of them, or the seeming randomness of them, because like the way I approach my life, or the way I enjoy my life, is you know, it looks to me like you can either, there's only one way or the other. You can kind of look at it and you go, everything's random, so it's just random, or it's not random. And if it's not random, then everything is a kind of a communication, like a lovely kind of magical communication. So I'm not saying one is run is right over the other. I just choose the one where it's a magical communication. And algorithms are kind of part of that. It's like, I think there was a thing, I can't remember when it was, let's say the 90s. I think it was called the Dice Men, where people used to roll the dice and make decisions based on the roll of the dice. I personally wouldn't be into that, but it's a similar kind of thing. So, yeah, so like when I look at YouTube, when I look at the homepage on YouTube and I see what the algorithm thinks I'd like to look at, I've found some lovely videos and very interesting videos that way. And I find that very cute. And then similarly, Spotify likes to sort of throw up songs that it thinks, based on what I listen to and what I like, it sort of throws up songs that it thinks I'm going to enjoy. So I was driving somewhere and I had that mode on where, you know, it was the algorithm was throwing up songs. And, you know, often I'm just like, no, that's no, just going through them. It'll start off almost now immediately. And I think I was telling you that at the beginning, for some reason, it got the idea that I really liked sort of techno Euro pop, which I like a little bit, but not that's all it was playing me. So anyway, I'm driving along, nice sunny day, and this song came on, and I'm going to play it for you in a minute, but I just encourage you to listen to it. I know it's an older song and it was talking about a particular era, but I would encourage you to just for the hell of it, just try on the possibility that this song is kind of speaking to our current moment, and it's just another way of looking at all the strange things that are happening at the moment. This is the way I received it. And, you know, only the history will really know what's really happening. So this is a nice possible way of looking at things, I think. And I'd intended to play it. I remember at the time, you know, when I was thinking about the next Sketchup episode, I thought, oh, I must play that song because it's a nice way of looking at things, as I say. And then yesterday, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away. And it even put this kind of song in even greater kind of relief. So, yeah, I'm going to play it now in a second for you. And in a way, it's like the past and the present kind of speaking together, because it was kind of around the time she was doing the fantastic work that she did and continued to do. So it's kind of a voice from the past and it's a voice for the present at the same time. So I want to dedicate it to her, to the great person that she was and the great work that she did and the great service that she did for us all. So here it is.
There's a new world coming, and it's just around the bend. There's a new world coming. This one's coming.
I don't know about you, but I find that lovely. I just find that very sweet. There's something very sweet and innocent about that time. It's just lacking in that cynicism that kind of pervades everything. There's an innocence there that we've lost now, sadly. I mean, you could say it was an innocence or you could say it was a naivety. But it doesn't matter. It's gone now. So it's nice. It's a refreshing take on things, I think. Now, speaking of lovely, beautiful things, I want to send out a big congratulations to Adrian Stein and Kwang Ho, who were on the podcast a while ago, one of the uncut episodes. And on it, you will have heard that they had planned to get married, and then the COVID and the lockdowns all happened, and they had to postpone it and indefinitely. Well, they went ahead. They got married, and you know, just a small little family wedding. And from the pictures, it looked lovely. So I just want to wish them heartfelt congratulations, and wish them all the best for the future. When they were on and afterwards, we talked a little bit more, and they were talking. We're talking about Irish, the Irish language, because they were thinking they had originally planned to come to Ireland for their honeymoon, and they were asking me if I, you know, spoke Irish, and I, I do a little bit, because I learned it in school, like everybody learned Irish in school. And still do. Unfortunately, you know, I was in school in the 60s, 60s and 70s, and back then Irish was still kind of enforced, like it was kind of rammed down our throats, and which is the worst thing you can do with teenagers and kids, because we all hated it. you couldn't get more uncool than the Irish language. So it certainly didn't cultivate a love of the Irish language in my generation. And anybody who did love it was viewed with suspicion. So I have some words. I have the odd bit of words, but nothing like younger generations now. They figured out how to cultivate a love of the Irish language, and it's a beautiful thing. And there are parts of Ireland where they speak Irish, you know, in the shops, and it's much more widely spoken. Those areas are called Gaeltacht areas, and I live not too far from one. In fact, I used to live in one here when we moved to Kerry first. We were actually on the Cork side of the border, and we lived in a Gaeltacht area near Coolay. And I've lived in a few Gaeltacht areas unintentionally in my life, but yeah, I don't speak it fluently, but it does kind of speak to me when I hear it. And when I was having this conversation with Adrian and Kwang, I sent them through my favorite kind of Irish song, which I only know kind of half the words of. It's kind of it's a little bit in English and a little bit in Irish, but it just really, I find it really moving. So it kind of speaks to my ancestral roots. I'll play you a little bit of it, of a recording, which was, you know, this isn't a studio recording, it's like a live recording, but I think it kind of conveys it a little bit.
Oh, I wish I were on yonder hill. 'Tis there I'd sit and cry my fill. Every tear would turn the mill. Scudet ma vôr mi'n slaw. Siwl, siwl, siwl ar ôl. E siwl gysocer, siwl dar sag sel skudet vor min slav avuach ni evin all your بلند تو خوی اسفوی اسفوک ولی انگاه میشه ولت فیگ دو سکوده تو بورد نسلا I'd sell my rock and I'd sell my reel. I'd sell my horny spinning wheel to buy my love a sword of steel.
I always get a little bit teary when I hear that song. So if you're wondering who that was Larla, L-A-R-L-A, O'Leonard, and Steve Cooney. Larla is the chap singing. And he, I just remembered, comes from the Arriada family who are from Coolay, where we moved originally. I just mentioned that. And Sean Arriada, his grandfather, is very famous in Ireland for writing very lovely Irish music in Irish for Mass, the Arriada Mass. And, I was brought up as a Catholic, but departed from that many, many years ago. But even with that, the Arriada Mass is very beautiful. So, just if you're curious about some of the what the hell he was singing about, it's actually, the song is written by a woman who's upset about her lover joining the military, but is still encouraging him. So, shul, it means walk, and shula ruin means sort of walk on, my love. But yeah, it just kind of highlights how little Irish I know. Well, let's see. Some of the other words I do know that I can pass on, because I know you really want to know, is I can count. I can count to 10. Aindo, 3, kahar, kuig, she, shucht, uct, ni, and de. So aindo, 3. That's counting to 10 in Irish. Ella is another word. That's a word for other. The word for word is focal. So it used to be a kind of a slightly humorous thing to say if somebody was saying, does that person speak a bit Irish? They'd say, do they have the cúpla focal? Which means, do they have the couple of words? Because, I mean, that song I just played you is a beautiful song. But another song that sticks in my mind to do with it is similar. And it's a kind of play on all of that song. It's a song, I mean, it's such a cliche on loads of different levels. Because I'll play it for you. It's got very diddly idle music. It's you know, when people think of the sort of music you hear in an Irish pub, this is the sort of music it is. But what sticks in my mind is it's a great play on a little bit of Irish words and a little bit of English words. And it's kind of the story of a little boy. The guy who sang this song, he used to sort of almost dress like a little boy, and he sang it very petulantly, which was quite funny to look at. Because, you know, he's a big kind of middle-aged guy. He definitely wasn't a child. And I'm trying to think of the words in it now. Basically, he's talking about the teacher picking on him for not knowing Irish. And it's one of those songs that just sticks in my mind. So here's, it's called Ain Focal Ella, which is basically, do you have any other Irish words? I'm pretty sure that's what that means. Woo!
When I was just a little lad, I used to go to school. I'd sit down there in the set, feeling like a fool.
The teacher taught us everything, everything we know. She had a great big lump of a stick that was bent into a bow.
She'd go in, fuckle ga, fuckle do, fuckle ella.
And I not know no fuckle at all.
She'd go in, fuckle ga, fuckle do, fuckle ella.
And I not know no fuckle at all. She taught us how to say all our ABCs. She showed us how to make little men out of plaster scene. She taught us how to say our prayer. She taught us right from wrong. The only thing about it, we didn't go to school too long.
She'd go in, fuckle ga, fuckle do, fuckle ella.
And I not know no fuckle at all.
She'd go in, fuckle ga, fuckle do, fuckle ella.
And I not know no fuckle at all. She taught about the history, the battle of the Boyne, and how to play a game with the chestnuts on the twine. She says, open up your cottages and learn off that information. If you don't get it into your big thick head, you won't get your confirmation.
She'd go in, fuckle ga, fuckle do, fuckle ella.
And I not know no fuckle at all.
She'd go in, fuckle ga, fuckle do, fuckle ella.
And I not know no fuckle at all.
She'd go in, fuckle
ga,
fuckle do, fuckle ella.
And I not know no fuckle at all.
She'd go in, fuckle ga, fuckle do, fuckle ella.
And I not know no fuckle at all.
A feckin' me,
a feckin' two, a dust the throat says I to you.
She'd go in, fuckle ga, fuckle do, fuckle ella.
And I not know no fuckle at all.
And we not know no fuckle at all.
Yahoo! Well, you can't say you don't get a bit of culture on this podcast. And yeah, you're very welcome for me putting that in your brain now, because it's so catchy that you will be singing Ain Fuckle 2, Fuckle 3, Fuckle all day. I know I do. Whenever I think of that song, it takes about 6 hours, 6 to 12 hours to get it out of my head. And it reminds me of my grandmother, who was quite a big character and completely different personality to my mother, who was quite, you know, kind of anxious in public. And my grandmother would take great pleasure in, if she was telling a story about somebody who was cursing, and she would do this in front of anybody, you know, bishop, prime minister, it wouldn't matter. And she would take devilish delight in recounting what the person had said, because it was a great excuse to curse, because it was almost like a free pass to curse. So, you know, you'd be sitting having high tea and then Granny would start into the story and my mother would know the story and start dying. And then my grandmother would get to the bit and she would be take great pleasure in going. And then he said, fuck it. He said, fuck it. I'm going to get a tram home and I don't give a shit. Or something like that. And my mother would be dying. Yeah, my grandmother was a great character. She stabbed me with the fork one time. That sounds great. It sounds really dramatic. But it wasn't. She, as I say, big character. She used to come over to our house sometimes for tea. And we would all have one thing. And she always made a point of having something completely different. And my mother was, you know, very obedient and respectful. So if whatever Granny wanted, she would make her. And I can't remember what we were having to eat, but, you know, whatever Granny was having, that was always the thing I wanted. And I was sitting beside her and I must have been like six, right? So I reached over, you know, what I thought was very, you know, surreptitiously without being noticed to try and get, I think she was having scrambled eggs, get a little bit of her scrambled eggs. And like a snake, you know, this, without even looking at me, her fork just shot out and sort of sliced the back of my hand. Which, I mean, sounds terrible, doesn't it? You wouldn't get away with that today, but Granny was from a different era. And of course, I started crying and my mother was so kind of dominated, let's say, by my grandmother that, you know, she was like, well, you shouldn't have tried to take your grandmother's, your granny's food. I still have the scar. Now it's very funny. At the time, of course, I thought it was terrible. And it's probably scarred me emotionally quite deeply, but, you know, it wasn't the worst thing that happened to me. And because I have such affection for my granny, I don't mind. She was a great advocate of children should be seen and not heard. She used to say that to us regularly. So I'm going to wrap up in a minute now. But before, seeing as I'm playing, this is the catch-up episode where I'm playing little bits of music. I've been meaning to do this for a good while. I'm going to play you a bit of poetry. Now, don't turn off, okay? I was only thinking the other day how it's funny that, you know, artists and all the artists I talk to, we all talk about how difficult it is as a living to make money and all these kind of things. But then you just mention poetry and it's like, oh, well, that's just a whole other that's just a whole other level of making your life difficult. It's almost a case of, well, it's hard being an artist, but thank God I don't want to be a poet. So anyway, I'm very fond of the poetry. I'm very fond of lots of different poets, but I'm very fond of the poetry of Sir John Betjeman, who's an English poet, and he was a poet laureate. And I came across, he made two albums, if you can believe it, back in the 60s. Now, this is not like William Shatner reciting poetry, okay? Just want to warn you. This is actually quite good. And it's him. It's him saying the poems, but they also put music to it as well. And there's lots of lovely poems on both of these albums. And the thing I really like about his poetry and these two albums particularly is they just conjure up an era. Sort of the war years and the 50s, early 50s. And they make me nostalgic. They make me nostalgic for that era, even though I'm not really nostalgic for that era, but it just conjures it up. And it's the probably the nicest bit of English culture. You know, like as an Irishman, it's all sort of in my genes, you know, being oppressed for 700 years and really feeling the weight of colonialism and the damage and the devastation and the famine. And I could go on for a long time. And that song I played earlier on, that tragedy that Larla manages to get into his voice. Yeah, well, that comes from all that those years of sorrow. So having said all that, there's a sort of a jolly hockey sticks kind of aspect to English culture. And from that kind of, you know, 30s through to 50s kind of period, you know, like the books of P.G. Wodehouse, particularly the books with Jeeves in them, that kind of thing, where it's slightly silly So John Betjeman's poems kind of speak to that kind of era, and really I find them very sweet. So this one anyway is called Indoor Games Near Newbury.
In among the silver birches, winding ways of tarmac wander, and the signs to Bussock Bottom, Tussock Wood and Windy Brake, gabled lodges, tile-hung churches, catch the lights of our Lagonda as we drive to Wendy's party, lemon curd and Christmas cake. Rich the makes of motor whirring, past the pine plantation purring, come up Hupmobile Delage, short the way or chauffeurs travel, crunching over private gravel, each from out his warm garage. Oh, but Wendy, when the carpet yielded to my indoor pumps, there you stood, your gold hair streaming, handsome in the hall light gleaming. There you looked, and there you led me off into the game of clumps. Then the new Victrola playing, and your funny uncle saying, choose your partners for a foxtrot, dance until it's 2:00, come on young'uns, foot it featly. Was it chance that paired us neatly? I who loved you so completely, you who pressed me closely to you, hard against your party frock. Meet me when you finished eating. So we met, and no one found us. Oh, that dark and furry cupboard, while the rest played hide and seek, holding hands, our two hearts beating in the bedroom silence round us. Holding hands and hardly hearing sudden footstep, thud and shriek. Love that lay too deep for kissing. Where is Wendy? Wendy's missing. Love so pure it had to end. Love so strong that I was frightened when you gripped my fingers tight and hugging whispered, I'm your friend. Goodbye, Wendy. Send the fairies, pinewood elf and larch tree gnome. Spingle spangled stars are peeping at the lush Lagonda creeping down the winding ways of tarmac to the leaded lights of home. There among the silver birches, all the bells of all the churches sounded in the Bath waste, running out into the frosty air. Wendy speeded my undressing. Wendy's the sheets caressing. Wendy bending gives a blessing, holds me as I drift to dreamland, safe inside my slumberware.
So there you go, that's Sir John Betjeman. Those two albums are called Banana Blush and Late Flowering Love. That's the other one. And yeah, they're both, I think, on iTunes and Spotify and those kind of places. So yeah, all right, well, that's pretty much it. One last thing I'll pass on. I've come across this beautiful phrase that seems to be what everybody wants to hear at the moment. And I'll say it to you and see how it makes you feel. When you think about how it's all going and what you're all, what you're doing with all, you know, how you're dealing with all the different things that are happening at the moment, I just want to tell you, you're doing great. How did that make you feel? Because I've discovered that just saying that to people, I just came across it by accident. You know, just talking to somebody and they just looked so concerned, so worried, and they were doing great. And I just sort of said to them, I just want to tell you, I think you're doing great. And their shoulders dropped and they just, their face softened a bit. And they said, really, really? I said, yeah. And then sometimes, you know, because I've been saying it to people since, and people say, well, how do you mean? And, you know, it's very easy to tell them how you think they're doing great. So I pass it on and I encourage you to say it to everybody. It just seems to be what everybody needs to hear right now, because everybody is doing great. I mean, everyone's great is different, of course, but it's a lovely thing to say to people and to say to yourself, you know, look in the mirror and go, you're doing great. It's lovely. Okay, so, yes, you're doing great. Well done. Keep it up. Keep up the good work. And I'll talk to you soon.
I've never felt this good in my entire life. Make me some spaghetti.
Actually, I'd prefer a cup of tea. A cup of tea would be lovely. So, yeah, just a little reminder, mainly because every second or third person who becomes a patron has got in touch with me and said, you know what, I've been listening to your podcast for ages and I didn't become a patron, not because I don't have the money, not because I don't think it's great, I just didn't get around to it. So this is a little friendly reminder that if you'd like to be a patron, you'd like to buy me a cup of tea, go to patreon.com/ John Dalton gently does it, all one word. Or follow the link in the show notes to become a patron. I would really appreciate it if you could do that, particularly if you've been meaning to and you just haven't got around to it. It would be great. It would mean a lot to me. All right. Thank you. Bye.
We are the Argyle Pimps. So buy us a drink. We're better than you thought, but not as good as we think. We are the Argyle Pimps. So buy us a drink. Come on, buy us a drink. Come on, buy us a drink. We are the Argyle Pimps. So buy us a drink. We're better than you thought, but not as good as we think. We are the Argyle.